The following program is rated TV-MA-LV. It contains strong language, violence, and nudity. It is intended only for mature audiences.
Here we go, Barflies. Welcome to the Barfly Tailgate Show. You already know it's done by Barflies for Barflies and all the other Bears fans out there. Well, as you can tell, sickness has ripped across this Barfly Tailgate Show and placed a couple of our guys on IR. Tooch and KB will not be joining us today, and Jordan Silvera is running a little bit late. I think he's having some trouble waking up. Maybe he's got some sickness too. I don't know. But my man C-Dub and myself will bring you all the news and notes you need for our Chicago Bears and answer a couple of your questions here at the end. But how was your vacation week, Quats? How you doing, brother?
I've been well, mate. I think, like we were saying before the show, I think the sickness is international because I've been a bit sick the last couple of days, but wouldn't miss the show today. And it's nice to have that sort of week off where you can just enjoy football and you can pick a game what you want to watch. But I do miss it when the Bears are not playing, you know, because I like to get emotionally involved. And it's like you were saying before, Andy, it's interesting to see how other teams play certain players and would them players work for the Bears. But it's great to have the Bears back playing today. And I don't know, man. I've got a little bit of a sneaky feeling that we might sneak this one.
Yeah. I was telling you before we got on too. It's kind of nice to just take the week off and just see around the NFL what other teams are doing, what other coaching staffs are doing, things like that. But it is nice to be back and like you said, be emotionally invested in a game and give a damn what the outcome is, I guess, other than – I mean, sports betting has come into Kentucky, and so that takes a little bit of my focus on. Okay, I'm going to watch this game because I've got money on it, you know. But
I keep expecting 1 week just to see you in the poorhouse. Like 1 week you'll be doing a show, and you're just like in a barn somewhere because you lost all your money from betting.
Well, I don't bet big. I'll bet small and try and hit big. I had a big parlay the other day for NBA, and I was one pick away. I was a last second shot away from making $575, but Golden State hit a last second shot and took the spread from 4, which is what I needed, to 2, and I was like, man, this sucks. But it is what it is. It was only a $25 bet that I put out, so I'm not out a whole lot. You know, I don't gamble my mortgage or anything like that, you know. But
you've got a wife and kid, mate. You've got to look after a wife and kid first.
Absolutely. But we'll get into that week a couple of weeks ago. If you can reach back into your memory banks, the Bears took on the Vikings and actually won the game on Monday Night Football. But the first thing we'll do is talk about the wanker of the week, and then we'll get into that game from last week. I'll hit the intro.
Kiss off, you grossy little wanker! 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 Shut up, you stuffy wanker!
Wanker!
You're a wanker!
Wanker!
Stop being a wanker.
You are a wanker, Andy Marr. And I'll be honest, I didn't know that was coming, but I'll say it again, you are a wanker.
This is Chris Watts' Wanker of the Week.
So if this is your first time listening to the show, or if you've been living under a rock, Chris Watts comes in every week and tells you who his Wanker of the Week was, who dropped the ball, who didn't do what they had to do to ensure a Chicago Bears dominating victory. So, Chris, without further ado, give me your Wanker of the Week from the Bears-Vikings game, please.
Well, the Wanker of the Week is definitely Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator. 22 fucking screen passes, man. What the fuck? You know, I've heard about, you know, not going, you know, being horizontal, but that was just absolutely ridiculous. And I know, like Minnesota have got a great, you know, defense and the disguise their blitz as well and the drop players back. But come on, Getsy, you know, it's like he just goes by, like, you know, how to defend, you know, how to operate against a blitz. And he just, like, looks at, like, Emmanuel and goes, oh, well, I better do that. And never thinks about mixing it up. And he was just lucky that guys made plays and Justin made plays at the end so we could win it. But it's just shocking how inconsistent he is as a play caller. You know, when you look through the season as well, I mean, I think the best game he sort of called was probably the Washington game, but like I would see the Bears play the Minnesota game in Chicago, and, you know, straight away, he didn't get the protection right, so Field got absolutely blindsided. And I can just remember turning to Dan going, we're not going to win this game because he's going to call a terrible game. And I was dead right as well. So, Luke Getsy, you are the wanker of the week, my son.
yeah, that's a solid pick. The screen passes drove me nuts. And there was one particular drive where they threw a screen pass to the left to DJ Moore, and he was able to break it, I believe, and get a first down. But they followed that up with a screen pass. They did the exact same play to the other side. Like, if we're seeing this from our couches or in the stands, these defensive players who have studied film all freaking week are definitely going to know what you're doing on the field. And get, like you said, he just doesn't have any rhyme or rhythm to his game. It's almost like Nagy used to do, almost like calling plays on Madden where you're just, yeah, that looks good, I'll click that. He doesn't stack plays or run different plays out of the same formation. Things that smart offensive coordinators do, we don't see that. And I'm wondering if coaching Aaron Rodgers caused him to not really learn a whole lot, because Rodgers is just going to do what Rodgers is going to do, and he's been in this league for so long. He knows what works and what doesn't. He's not going to just, okay, that's the play, I'm running it. Whereas Fields is so young and knows that he's, like, on the cusp of possibly not being here, he's not going to try and ruffle any feathers in that coaching staff, I don't think. So, it was a very frustrating game. And honestly, the Vikings game, we won it, but it was the losingest win I can remember as a Bears fan. I mean, it just it didn't feel like a win. I went to work the next day, and everyone knows I'm a Bears fan there, so they're always talking to me about the Bears, and they were like, wow, you guys got a win yesterday. And I was like, yeah, they're going to win enough fucking games to keep this Eberflus in town, it seems like. But
please answer me this question, right? Where one of the best running sides in the whole league, right? But I think like in the top five running offense. So why do we always have Justin Fields and shotgun? Why don't we have him under the center so we can do the play action? And Justin Fields is really good at doing the play action as well. And I could have seen him a few times earlier this year where he really does it really well and really fakes out the opposition. So why the fuck are we always in fucking shotgun? You know what I mean? It's sort of like, basically, if you're doing it in a shotgun and you give it to the guy in an RPO, the defense can see what you're doing a lot of the time. You know what I mean? It's like running backs, they ran 5 yards and it's given the defense 5 yards of that guy running towards them to see that he's got the ball. And that is so annoying, man. It's sort of like, mix it up a little bit, you know what I mean?
Right.
And because we are so good at running, that would surely help the offensive out and take, you know, a bit of pressure off Justin. And also, it might give, you know, DJ Moore a nice long catch or something like that. And that's something that's been annoying me all season, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know how to segue into this, but Jordan Silvera has popped in backstage, so I'm going to bring him in and bring him a part of this conversation. Good morning, Jordan. How you doing, brother?
I'm well, fellas. Good morning. How are you both?
We're doing good. We just hit the wanker of the week. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah. We just hit the wanker of the week, and it was Luke Getsy. So we were talking about all the screen calls and the way he doesn't stack plays or build off of anything. And how did you feel about the Bears-Vikings game from 2 weeks ago? I was telling Chris it was the losingest win that I've ever watched. I feel like we won against all odds. I don't know. What'd you feel about it, Jordan?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I'm with you, fellas. It's obviously 2 weeks ago. It feels like a lifetime at this point with just how fast life moves. But certainly it's hard to argue. Where you're going to parse it, where the chicken and the egg starts is, I think, is the problem. Because I do think that, and I hate to say this, I do think there's a lot of Luke Getsy that just doesn't have faith or confidence in Justin Fields. And so whether that's fair or warranted or not is a different story. But I can't help but think that, you know, who calls? Because here's the thing. With all due respect to them and Luke Getsy, if you're a professional, how could you possibly be in a position where you would throw for a look at it and say that, am I losing you fellas?
Yeah, you're cutting in and out, bud. I didn't know if it was you or if it was me. Try and back out and back in and see if that fixes anything. You're frozen on my screen right now. So I'll drop you out and try to filibuster a little bit. Go ahead, Chris.
That's usually me.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just going to say that's usually me. What causes all the fucking technical problems, man? But, yeah, I mean, it would have sort of, I mean, I thought the ending was great at the game. It was great to see Justin get that sort of comeback victory, what he desperately needed. And it was great seeing the footage in the locker room after the game with Ryan Poles and really sort of, you know, giving Justin Field a hug and giving him that confidence. But I just can't make sense of Getsy at all. I mean, the worst thing is he actually comes over quite well in his interviews, but it's actually offensive strategy. It's just all over the place, and it's very unimaginative. But I mean, the thing is with screen passes is that if the players don't really, really do the jobs really well, like the best team I've seen do screen passes is the 49ers, especially last week. That, I mean, some of their screen passes, and you saw how their blockers came out in front, their linemen, it was like literally like, you know, this is how you draw it up and this is how you run it. And that's when screen passes work, not how Getsy does it, and not like the amount of times. I mean, for fuck's sake, how many times have we moaned about them bubble screens to wide receivers? What he constantly does, and it constantly never, ever fucking works very well, which is so annoying. And it just baffles me that surely, like, you know, Eberflus must sort of talk through the week, saying, look, this ain't working out. Can we please sort of do this? Or I've seen that maybe our offense has got this sort of strength or anything like that. But maybe Eberflus doesn't. I don't really know, man. I don't know if he just sort of leaves Getsy just to get on with it or whatever. But I've had enough of Getsy, to be honest with you. I really have done.
Yeah, yeah. I've kind of had it with the whole coaching staff from top to bottom. Not only the bubble screens. Okay, screens are fine if you're not running 22 of them. But on top of that, he does it like to the wrong people. There was a play in that game where they threw a screen to Cole Kmet and had Tyler Scott or Darnell Mooney, one of the two, blocking for him. Like, why would you not change that personnel around and give the ball to the smaller guy and have the bigger guy blocking for him? Like, how does that not make sense? And you spoke on the
– You mean like the –
Go ahead. Go ahead.
It's like every other team, does. It really is.
Yeah, I mean, you spoke on the 49ers. You had Deebo Samuel really going off on the Philadelphia Eagles, and he's a great, fantastic athlete who can run through contact and do all those things as well. But yeah, I mean, the setup is perfect, and I feel like we may have the personnel to do it, because one of Poles's major things in the draft is drafting athletic guys with high RAS scores. So we have the athletes to be able to get out in space and block someone. It's just almost like, A, we do it too often to where it doesn't catch anyone off guard. And then B, you're using the wrong personnel. I almost feel like where we hit those two big screen passes in the preseason, it really made Getsy feel like we could do it a lot better than we have been able to do it, maybe. And so he's just going back to the well, but he's going so much that it's not even it doesn't trick anybody. You know what I'm saying? So, I'll try to bring Jordan back in. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, but I think a lot of that comes down to what you mentioned earlier on, AC, regarding Getsy coaching Aaron Rodgers. I imagine Aaron Rodgers don't really need coaching at all, does he? You know what I mean? He's done it. He's seen it all. He's a completely different quarterback to what Fields is anyway. So, I think that was a poor decision to actually employ Getsy as the offensive coordinator in the first place, because I know he called some plays in college, but this is big boy time. You know what I mean? This is the NFL, mate. Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I think it would just... It's like you say. I mean, I've had enough of the coaching staff. I know Eber Fluss has brought the defensive back to a decent defense, but I just can't see how Getsy can come back next year, really, at all.
Yeah. Are you caught up now, Jordan?
I think so. I'm hoping it sounds better and it's all working better. I told you, so I had to swap to a whole different laptop. I told you, computer one was giving me a real problem, so... I'm back. Thank you for dealing with the technical difficulties. I'll be a real quick ramble just to finish what I was saying. I do think that if you're hired in the NFL, it's hard to believe that you're such a professional that you would unknowingly call four screens or unintentionally. I think that some of that has to do with the fact that there's a lack of trust and confidence in Justin Fields. Whether that's warranted or not is a different story. But the reality is, and I think that we could obviously spend an hour if we wanted to on the fact that I don't think Luke Getsy has ever really bought into Justin Fields. Just some of the conversations early on about, and obviously they're going to tell you they like the kid, think he's going to work hard, all those things. But I mean, even to talking about is how he takes his snap shotgun, you know, some of the plays, the lack of designed runs early to start when you have an athlete at the position. So I'm with you, fellas. I think that certainly you can make Luke Getsy Wanker of the Week. I probably wouldn't argue too much. I just think that it probably cuts a little both ways, and certainly the blame should go on the coach more than the player. But certainly, too, I think that when you look at it 2 weeks ago, the fact what it is a one single deep ball really that went, and that was the last play of the game. So,
right.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. That ball, though, was an absolute freaking dime by Justin Fields. I loved that play. And DJ Moore did his job and got open. Then we just kneeled it a few times and kicked another field goal. Matt Eberflus was the first coach this year to win a ball game where he didn't score a touchdown. So our head coach continues to make history in the opposite direction. It's just tough. And the defense is playing really well, though. They're starting to take the ball away. Yeah. We're getting good pressure. I think Montez Sweat has a lot to do with that. The linebackers are playing well. TJ Edwards is putting up Pro Bowl numbers. There's no other way to phrase it other than that. I know a lot of people still have a lot of love for Roquan, but TJ Edwards is doing what Roquan did in that position. So it's not that much of a fall off. The secondary is playing really well. We're starting to see – you know, like I said, they're taking the ball away, which is a huge part of this defense. But Chris, what are you seeing, you think, week in and week out? And what's been other than saying the obvious Montez Sweat, what's been the obvious difference in this defense since Eberflus has really taken over?
I think really compared to Alan Williams, I think he's putting a lot more pressure on the opposition's quarterback. I think he's trying to blitz a bit more. be a bit more aggressive, and but he still plays very soft, you know, zones. So, like, you know how we lost to Detroit last time, where, you know, we were letting their running backs get a lot of short passes, you know, little screens and stuff like that, which let them win the game. But I do think he's starting to put a lot more pressure on the quarterback and being a lot more aggressive, because, you know, that was the one thing that, like, all last year and the majority of this year, that we said, well, we're just not getting any pressure on the quarterback. And I think it's a combination of him being a bit more aggressive with his play calling, having Sweat, having our guy, friend of the show, Andrew Billings, stuffing up the middle. And I think that's been a combination, really. But I think as well, he knows he's coaching for his life. So he's probably so sort of focused on the defense as well. But it's just a bit weird that, well, how come he couldn't have picked that up when Alan Williams was the defensive guy, when he was absolutely terrible? You know, you're supposed to be the CEO of the club, and you should be telling your defensive guy, look, we're not getting any pressure. We need to get some pressure somehow. I know definitely yourself, AC, you're not a fan of the scheme, that you feel the scheme's like 20 years out of date, which probably doesn't help as well. But I'm just happy to see more pressure on the opposition's quarterback.
Yeah, I think I still think the scheme is outdated. However, it can work. I mean, the 49ers run a 4-3 defense. The Houston Texans run a 4-3 defense. The several teams run it. It's just about having the coach with the balls to really do what I think Eberflus has been doing lately, which is switching it up a little bit, changing coverages, or having guys move before the snap to kind of confuse the quarterback, and blitzing. I mean, bring extra guys. If you're not going to get home with your front four, you got to bring extra guys. Now, since Sweat's been in town, we've been able to get home with four, which is helping, I think. And, guys, I think Kyler Gordon is becoming a bit of a star in front of our eyes. He's playing the ball really well, not only picking the ball off, but he gets his nose in there and makes the tackle, and you don't get that a whole lot with corners. So he's a different type of animal, the way he's been playing lately. Jordan, what have you seen on this defense scheme-wise? Do you think Eberflus is – and Chris brought up a great point there that I forgot to touch on. It seems like when Eberflus's back is against the wall is when he has his best coaching game. I don't know if that has something to do with it, but what are you seeing out of this defense, Jordan?
I think Chris did a good job kind of summing it up, and I think that obviously it's easy to fall into the comparison or the controversy about, is it Phil Snow that's really doing it, the conspiracy of it. But I mean, I gotta say, if you go back and look just at the timeline, I think that's really when it started to change. You gave Phil Snow about a week or two, mm-hmm. and then the defense started to take off. And I'm not at all saying that that's not Eberflus. Eberflus clearly has chops as a defensive coordinator. You've seen that. But where I really find myself leaning into the Phil Snow aspect is that Eberflus would call pressure, but he would call it specifically on late downs, third down in Indy. They're blitzing consistently and finding pressure with it. And the blitzes are not just sending a mic through the A. They're sending different players. They're dropping defensive ends, defensive tackles. Like I said, you'd see some of that on the Indy film, but not a ton. Whereas all of those exotic blitzes, sims, and creepers are all very commonplace for Phil Snow when he was at Baylor, when he was in Carolina with Matt Rhule. So I do. There's no doubt the defense is getting better. There's no doubt that everybody should give their flowers to Matt Eberflus for that. And maybe I'm jaded because I just don't like Matt Eberflus's system, scheme, or him as a head coach. I'm sure he's a great guy, but I do think a lot of that has to do with Phil Snow.
Yeah, it is possible, because it does seem like it turned around quite a bit when they hired him. And I don't want to take away from Eberflus and what he's been doing with this team. And obviously these players like playing for him, because they're still playing hard regardless of what our record is, regardless of what the score is. They're still out there giving all effort and doing all that stuff. I don't like Eberflus, and you guys know it's me. Like, even his post game, the Chicago Bears keep putting it on their Instagram, the post game speeches in the locker room. That guy just doesn't do anything to motivate me as a fan. Like, Whereas as the opposite, the guy we're playing this week, Dan Campbell, I'd run through a freaking brick wall for that guy, the way he believes in his team and takes accountability. I mean, when they lost on Thanksgiving, he was the first one to say, yeah, that fourth down call was bad. That's on me. He didn't say we didn't execute it right or we thought we saw something on tape. It was just, yeah, that's my bad. I'll be better about it next time, you know. And maybe –
I mean, shit, you had me sold when Dan Campbell was doing up-downs with the team in training camp. When he was like, first thing we're doing is we're doing up-downs, and the old man is sitting there doing with him with everybody else. He was doing it better than some of the defensive linemen that were half-assing it out there. Like, and I remember talking to Aldo about it. Aldo wasn't totally sold on Dan Campbell, but I'm like, no. It's I'm not telling you he's the greatest coach alive or anything like that, but there's just – a certain level of skins on the wall that as a player, you coming into that building. And they talked about that at Hard Knocks, and I thought it had veracity, which is as a Lions player, if I'm walking into the building, I'm looking at a coach that played tight end, which is a gritty position under Parcells. He's and Sean Payton, so he's got that. I'm looking at my quarterback coach, and that's Mark Brunell, a lifer at quarterback, Antoine Randall-El, a guy that cut his teeth playing quarterback wide receiver for the Steelers. It's all across the roster. I mean, they literally – it's Hank Fraley at offensive line. It's Kelvin Shepard at linebackers, Dre Bly at cornerbacks. Like, really, any position, you have a coach that's trying to coach you, and there has to be buy-in because I know exactly – you know what you're talking about. There's no question about it. You played in this league. And a matter of fact, all of these guys played in the league for many years. So at the very least, what I want to do is try to emulate – the things that you did because you were able to make a very fruitful long career in a league that gives you 2 to 3 years on average.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if there's nothing else to talk about, go ahead, Chris.
Another thing as well regarding Eberflus is that you think about the start of the season when we got beat by the Green Bay Packers. They had the whole off season to prepare for that game and they came out so flat. And they were absolutely terrible, and then we lost 4 straight games. So you're thinking, what the fuck have you been doing, my man? Do you know what I mean? You know, that looked like we were so hyped up for that first game because Aaron Rodgers has left. We all thought, you know, the tide were turning towards the Bears. And we just laid an egg, basically. And that makes you think, well, what sort of coaching is going on? Why aren't you more prepared? Why are you hiring people who are getting sacked by HR? What sort of character are these people? You know, because, you know, they all talk about the culture of the organization. Well, really, he's brought in a toxic culture. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or a culture where there's no, you know, like they're letting things go what should be let go in an organization. So that to me as well, that sort of puts me off even for the sort of all the little things and also the sort of lack of preparedness and the lack of accountability. Because, like, sometimes, especially at the start of the season, it felt like, you know, they didn't feel like any of the coaches were accountable. It felt like they were all a bit too safe in the jobs. You know, it never felt like they were on anybody on the hot seat, even though we've won, you know, a ridiculous small amount of games in the last 2 seasons, really, when we've had these guys in charge. So I think he's a decent defensive coordinator, but as a CEO, as a head coach, I just think it's a little bit beyond the guy.
Yeah, I agree completely. And honestly, I didn't believe in him as a DC until I saw him take over for DC, you know, and take over those. But that points back to the coaching staff that he assembled. You know, you just talked, Jordan, you just went on and talked about the coaching staff that Dan Campbell has assembled up there in Detroit with a bunch of former players and guys who have been there. Whereas this coaching staff in Chicago, I don't know of any former players that are on it. And until he took over as the DC, I mean, on top of that, you've got a DC that left, resigned. We never found out why. And you had a running backs coach that was fired for HR issues. And then he comes out and talks about how great the culture is and how good, you know, how he's holding these people accountable and holding them to a standard. Well, I just don't see it, man. I don't think he... And just like you said, Chris, I feel like he is in over his head, and he shows it every week when he gets out there and talks to the Chicago media. Will rip you to pieces if you let them. And he really just sits up there and lets them week in and week out. and it almost it kills me when I watch guys like Mike McDaniel down in Miami and Dan Campbell and other coaches, how they interact with the media as opposed to our head coach. It's
That to me is what's crazy, is because I mean I would love to, I hope I'm wrong, Joe, but I really do. But there, I do believe there's some truth, there's some veracity to the fact that he could be back. And I mean, we'll see when that happens, and obviously we'll play the waiting game to see. But it's amazing to me too, and I would hope that cooler heads and smarter heads prevail, and Kevin Warren and hopefully Ryan Poles that have some game in making that decision. And I, the reason I say that is, when you look at who Eberflus has beat, I mean, we can go back to last year. Maybe I'm missing a few, but every team that the Chicago Bears beat, it's either like they should be beating, or the ones that they beat. I mean, maybe the Patriots last year, but the Patriots last year were kind of a sign of, it's a team going in the wrong direction. Even if you want to try to pitch me, well, the Vikings are a feisty team and they found a way to beat the Vikings, I'm telling you that it was almost a coin flip game where it literally came down to the last play and Justin Fields had to hit a dig. But, I mean, and this is well documented from the former executive scout from the Bears talking about one play later he looks like shit. The next play he's hitting a dig. And needless to say that you had to have Joshua Dobbs gift you four interceptions or whatever it was to come close to winning that game. Outside of that, so if you want to call that a good win, I suppose I would disagree. You're beating the Raiders, who fired their coach since, and we're playing Brian Hoyer. You beat the Commanders, which I guess give you some credit. They had all the guys on defensive line. I'll give you that win. But, I mean, Ron Rivera is a dead man walking. Yeah. They've kind of come back to earth. And then you just think about any other games that they've won. Who else have they beat this year?
It's all backups. Like the Patriots game was against.
Oh, Panthers was the other one. Yeah, I mean that was Bryce Young and everything. But the Panthers also fired their coach and are looking like they're handed the number one pick to the Bears. So if he stays, I'd be shocked. But I also think that there's a possibility of that. And in a league where production is king, I don't think any of the production he's had is substantive. I think it's all fat. It's just bullshit wins that he's found a way to scrape to.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're heading that direction already, so we'll just get right into it and start talking some of this Bears and Lions. They play today at 1 o'clock Eastern time. We had this team beat a couple of weeks ago, and they let it slip away. They gave up 14 points in the last 4 minutes, I believe, 5 minutes of the game to lose the game. I was mind blown, Watts, absolutely. How Chris, I know you said you were kind of feeling a little feisty today. You think the Bears might be able to sneak it. What are you looking for offensively, first of all, and then we'll talk a little defense and maybe get into some predictions and stuff. But how are you feeling about this offense today, Chris?
I've just got a feeling, man. I think because we won that Monday night game. And it might give Justin Field that bit of confidence knowing that, that like his first, comeback victory. But I just thought that we'd get the running game established, really. I think that the Detroit defense has been lacking over the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, they've been giving up a lot of points, a lot of yardage. So I'd like to get the running game going. I hope Foreman's playing because I think he could do a really good job against them. And then set up play action passes, like we mentioned earlier in the show. Instead of just always being in the shotgun, set up some play action passes, and not have so many fucking screen passes, man. Because we all know that Detroit are going to go. They're not going to get out of play that. But I just think our offense, if we just start getting the running game going, get some sort of momentum going so we can, develop the game from the running game, i.e., short to middle passes, play action passes, then I think we've got a good chance because I think our offensive line is finally gelling a little bit, even though, I think we're still struggling at centre. But I think the rest of the line seems to be, gelling really well. We're getting Davis back, and obviously Jenkins is playing. I mean, he's just a beast. I mean, I know Jordan, he's got his man crush still on Jenkins, but he's been playing like a beast over this year when he's been healthy. So I just thought that we've got a bit more of a balanced offence rather than being one or the other. That's what I'd like to see this afternoon.
Yeah, I agree. I love what you said about the offensive line. It seems like they're really gelling. We've got a bunch of young pieces on that offensive line. The biggest issue is the guy in the middle, whether it's Lucas Patrick or Cody Whitehair, or they gave my guy Feeney a couple of snaps. Even his first snap was ugly and low, and he had communication issues with Justin. That was actually in Detroit where that happened. Yeah, that seems to be the weak link of the O-line. I think Tevin Jenkins is, if he stays healthy, he's playing himself into a contract extension. I mean, that's a guy that's you use him getting out in front in a run game. He just mauls guys, and he's done it since college, really. Jordan, I know you saw the tape in college where he just
buried dudes. I said at the time, I know it's crazy, but I was like, that was my favorite pick. I liked it more than Justin Fields' pick. And Justin Fields' pick was fine. It's just Tevin Jenkins was a guy after my own heart. I'd love to see him extended, but I also – fire beware. You want to see him healthy. And I understand everybody's going to say, well, it was like, you know, an ankle injury and they're not, you can't predict them. You can never predict any injury, but as good as he is, and I'm not at all downing Jenkins, he is fantastic when he's on the field. He's one of the better guards in the league. I don't know if I'm not ready to go top five, top seven, but he's top echelon. Let's put it that way. He's in the top half of the league. I think my issue is there are guards, like one that comes to mind immediately, Quinn Miners, the guard from the Denver Broncos, who he's a run blocker and kicks ass in the run game too. Like, he's fantastic. He's kind of in that same realm as Tevin Jenkins. And to me, I look at a guy like him and he's not nearly as much injured. That doesn't mean that, you know, you don't give Tevin Jenkins the contract extension, but I just think my biggest issue there is, can you stay healthy, big guy? Mm-hmm. And if you can, let's throw the bag at you. But to me, I think the number there is going to be interesting. You certainly don't want to let another good player walk out the door, but it's certainly got to come at the right number because of his inability. He's a glass cannon is the best way to put it. When he's on board, he's firing on all cylinders, but you're going to deal with, at this point, it feels like five games, maybe that's harsh, but 3 to 5 games a year that he's not playing. And that's tough.
Yeah. A glass cannon. I like that reference. That's excellent. I think if they do give him a contract extension, it'll be filled with a bunch of caveats. You play elevators, this amount of games, you get this. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, you can't fault how he's been playing, man, when he's on the field. Someone talked about Darnell Wright in the chat. I love that draft pick. I think he's played really well. He has had issues with holding and jumping off sides a time or two, but, I mean – he's a young guy and he's all the way out there. Maybe he's not all the way up to how loud it is in some of these stadiums, which you would think he would be. I mean, he played in the SEC. We get loud here in the SEC. So you would think he would be ready for that. But I mean, when he's on, he's on. Nate Davis, when he's on, he's on. Jordan, that's another guy that you stood up for when a bunch of Bears fans were dogging him for not playing. He's played really well, and Braxton Jones came back from injury, and he stepped right in and played really well. The biggest issue is at center on that offensive line. As far as receivers, DJ Moore became a 1,000-yard receiver, so shout out to him. Against all odds and with all the in and out of quarterback play and dealing with screens, it's definitely great to have a 1,000-yard receiver on the roster. He's a great dude. He goes on the score every Monday or whatever day is after a ball game and talks with Mullion Hall. And he never says anything that's going to catch headlines. He never says anything to dog anybody. He's just a consummate professional. Maybe he's just used to that from his time in Carolina and dealing with a bunch of different quarterbacks. But that has continued. Still not seeing Darnell Mooney. I don't know. It's a contract year for him. Do you guys think he is able to do anything these last five games to get himself an extension? Chris, you're taking a deep breath. How are you feeling about Mooney, man?
I mean, it's just a bit of a shame with Mooney, really. I think like last year he was sort of like Justin Fields' main target. But I think them drafting Tyler Scott this year, it's definitely put pressure on him, but he just doesn't seem to be getting open, really. But he's still a really, really useful, wide receiver. He's just sort of, I don't know if he's sort of lost his way or the offense is sort of just didn't see him or they're just not scheming to get the ball to him. But he just seems to just a little bit out of step with the offense. So I think that's going to be one of their a big decision for the coaches and the GM this off season is what to do with Mooney. Do we stick with Mooney or do we use Tyler Scott instead and release him or trade him? But I'll be interested to see what Jordan says. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah. To me, it's hard to. There's only enough money to go around, and it's not like the Bears are cash broke and cap. But I think that if you're picking and prioritizing things, I mean, first off, you got to think too. The reality is, and I know this wouldn't be talked about a lot, but this is why I'm a football nerd, fellas. That number one pick is going to be costly on the cap. You are going to get that number one pick, and that's going to be a nice chunk. And then if you're picking in the top five again, that's another hefty chunk to be paying on cap. And then of course now we start talking about who you fill in the roster with. Are you signing a free agent center? You know, what are we doing with Jalen Johnson? So are we repaying him? All of a sudden, you can't pay everybody. So to me, I think Mooney is the odd guy out. I think, Chris, you made an astute point, and it's something that I felt kind of in the beginning, which is Tyler Scott was not the Claypool replacement. It wasn't the Moore replacement. He played a lot like Darnell Mooney. And so to me, and they've been giving him reps, and they obviously like what he brings. And this is not a knock on Darnell Mooney. I think he's a good player. I don't mean to be, rude in that way, but I think Darnell Mooney would be killing it with Patrick Mahomes, a guy that needs a receiver. Yeah. So that's not like a shot at Justin Fields or anything. I just think for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. When he was the only guy and they had to force him because there was nobody equal to him, certainly the ball had to go there. He was making more plays. But as you've clearly seen a pecking order of what they'd like to do, whether that's fair or not with Tyler Scott, DJ Moore, Equanimeous St. Brown being in there for certain plays, I do think that there's a situation where it doesn't make a lot of sense to bring him back. And for his sake, too, I'd like to see him go somewhere where he's going to be used and get a quarterback that can throw him the ball consistently and allow him to thrive, because I think he's a damn good player, and we've seen that. Again, it's not a shot at Field, but whether we like it or not, he's seen the first 4 years of his career kind of go by the wayside. Yes, he had a 1,000-yard year, as it's kind of gone, it started at its best and it's just gotten worse, where he had a guy like Allen Robinson to take a lot of the attention while he could get open. And he's not had that since this year, and it's just not working. So I wish him the best. I hope he finds a place that could certainly use him. Like I said, Kansas City makes a lot of sense. I'm sure I could find some others as we go around. I mean, look no further than, like, hey, LA Chargers, it'd be nice to go get a receiver that has some speed that can take the deep balls. So, I hope Darnell Mooney finds a good contract in free agency. I don't think it'll be in Chicago. As much as he's a good guy, they may want to re-sign him. It'd have to be a really, really palatable number.
Right. Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. It depends on what he's looking for. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you talked about the Chargers. I mean, or the Chiefs, rather. He was brought here in the Nagy offense, and that's when he had his best years. And guess where they're running that? It's in Kansas City. So if he were to go somewhere, somewhere that needs somebody to take some heat off of Travis Kelce and actually have a receiver, I mean, they're trying to force it to Rashee Rice, who's come on as of late, but I feel like they need more. And maybe that's a good spot where he lands. But, yeah, I think just like you said, Chris, the Tyler Scott, they kind of drafted him to replace Mooney, and they trusted him actually in the last game against Detroit. The deep ball to put the game away, he slowed down and missed it completely, and that hurt him in that game. And I believe he had a fumble in that game as well. So ball security is a big deal. So we'll just have to see this offseason if Ryan Poles wants to stick with Darnell Mooney, or if he wants to move forward with Tyler Scott as a guy that he drafted. Whereas, Ryan Pace drafted Mooney, and as much as I love Mooney, I have his jersey. It just doesn't look good to me. We have a lot of people in the chat talking about our running backs. I haven't looked at the injury report, but I believe we're fully healthy at the running back position. So if Dante Foreman can come back this week, I really like the way he runs. Of course, I love Rojo. Roshan Johnson plays great when he's in there. It's just his running style is injury prone, I would say. I don't know how else to put that. The way he runs, he's going to get hurt. But I love having Dante Foreman back. He's a guy who – At the game that I was at against the Raiders, he ran all over them. He was catching balls out of the backfield. I think he had a hat trick that day, three scores. So, I'd be happy to have him back and see how he does against this Lions defense. Chris, who's your favorite running back in our backfield? Or do you think Herbert comes back and has a good game today? Or who are you looking for today?
Did we lose him? May I lost him.
Yeah, I think he's frozen. Well, I'll just pass to you, Jordan, and then if he comes back in, we'll see if he can pick up and talk some running backs as well.
Yeah, I mean, I see everybody talking about Deontay Foreman. I think he is back. He looks to be back. He'll probably get the start. And I mean, it's tough to me. AC, I have my priors. So I like myself some Roshon Johnson, and I wish that he would get more of an opportunity. But that said, I also understand it. Again, I said it earlier, it's productivity league, and there's no doubt in my mind that Foreman is the most productive. So I think that he'll take the start, and then hopefully – I don't know how you feel about this, but there was talk about Khalil Herbert was getting out-snapped by guys like Foreman, and to me that was more indicative of Khalil Herbert trying to get himself back into playing shape and getting back into form. I don't think that he was necessarily 100% ready to go when he came back. So I think that you'll start to see more Foreman, probably second in pecking order is Khalil Herbert, because I still think that you'd prioritize that change in running style, that change in skill set. And then you have a guy like Roshon Johnson being your pass blocking back. And that's really the three. We don't have to talk about it now, but I'll be most interested to see how they treat those running backs, because it is kind of just they're the same player in Foreman and Roshon. And you're certainly not cutting Roshon. But Foreman's had a fantastic year, so I'll be curious to see if they want to retain both of those because they play the same way. I tend to think that they'll let Foreman walk, and the problem is it's just running backs aren't going to get paid, because the best scenario would be Foreman to get a decent deal, and you get a pick back if you're not spending too much in free agency, but he'll probably end up leaving and taking a 1 or 2 year deal, not because he shouldn't stay, not because he's not a good player, but I want my fourth rounder to get some play, and right now he can't. Because Foreman's just being such a dog and keeping him off the field.
Yeah, I love Foreman and the way he runs. He did only sign a 1 year contract here,
I mean, we could look it up, but I feel like it's just one of those things where he's at his draft pedigree and everything else. It's one of those things that he's kind of just taken mercenary deals at this point. Let's see, yeah, 1 year, $3 million.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just love the way he runs, man. Even my wife, when she's watching the Bears, she's like, I like that 21 guy. I like the way he runs. And like I said, we saw him live. He was tearing up the Raiders, but I don't know if that's more of a good thing to say about him or a detriment to the Raiders' defense. I don't know which one it is. But, yeah, and Jay Griss says, yeah, Foreman gets injured a lot. That's going to hurt him. Whether he's here or if he does hit the open market, you know, his injuries, once a running back continues to get older and the injuries continue to pile up, that's why these guys don't get paid the way they used to. And it's almost a shame, but that's just the way the NFL is going. Guys and feel like they can draft.
It's a car crash position, AC. Like, and this is the thing, too, is guys like him, and I love Roshon Johnson, he's got the same problem. You want to play a car crash position and you're looking to initiate the car crash? Like, you know, these things are going to happen. It's par for the course. You're going to get hurt. And I mean, Foreman is no different than that. And he's a guy that he, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. I mean, obviously, you know me, I scout a lot of players every year, but I remember him back at Texas. And I do think he had a couple injuries or coming out into when he got drafted to the Texans, I believe. He's been to all the AFC South teams, Texans, Colts, Titans. So he's been to 3 out of 4, and I believe he may have gotten hurt early on there with a leg injury, and I think that's what kind of got him cast off. And then he took a year or two off to do trucking with his father, who's now passed, and then came back into the league and ripped it as Derrick Henry's backup, and that's kind of what launched him from the Titans to the Panthers, now to us.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a pretty good season with the Panthers last year. I believe a 1,000-yard season, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
We'll bring Chris back in here and talk a little running backs. Chris, oh, you're actually moving. Okay, I got you on that one. So we just talked a little bit about the running backs. I know how much you love your running backs position. Who are you looking for today to have a good game against the Lions?
I mean, it's Foreman for me, mate. I think really he's such a great balance of a player. You know, he's got like a nice little moose to him, but he can also put his shoulder down and over the guy. And I think he's one of them players what wears defenses down because he's got that size to him. So for me, he's my favourite running back at the moment. Regarding the rookie, he does run very upright, but I think he really needs to sort of work on his lateral movement. He runs very straight in straight lines. I'd like to see him, you know, sidestep a bit more and juke people a bit out and lower his shoulder a little bit. But yeah, I hope Foreman has a really good game today. As long as he doesn't start doing them ridiculous hurdling, what he was doing against the Raiders, which he actually ended up injuring himself. He did about three in a row, didn't he, AC? Which were ridiculous. I mean, it looks cool, but like, I mean, I remember I was on the pitch doing the, doing the bear down flag. And I went down to touch the pitch, and the pitch were absolutely rock hard. I was really surprised. I thought it'd have a little bit of bounce to it, but it felt harder than you know, the actual fake grass stuff. So, yeah, I just want Foreman to have a really good game. So I think really he could wear down that defensive line, get them linebackers a bit tired, and like I said before, open up the play action pass a bit.
Yeah, the play action is definitely going to be key today. And maybe hit Cole Kmet a little bit. He's having a hell of a year. The running game has to lead to the passing game. And hopefully Luke Getsy has seen something that he can exploit against the Lions. I mean, we exploited it for three quarters last time. So hopefully we can get in there and finish the game this time. But the biggest part of finishing from the last game was our defense. The D-line's playing really well with Sweat. Linebackers are playing well. Secondary's been playing well. We just let it slip away at the end of the game last time. And what, Jordan, did you see, like, what caused us to blow this game against the Lions in the last go-round? And what can maybe we can do to – hold on to the lead if we do get it?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I don't want to sound so negative on the Bears. I also think that it goes back to that point of I want to see them beat a legitimate team. And I do think that the Lions, as much as they've kind of fallen down crest on some of their luck, some of their skill, Jared Goff seems to be kind of coming back to the norm. It's not impossible for the Bears to win, but I will say I think that the Lions, I give them a little bit of the edge, and it's for what you're talking about is how do the Bears overcome or how do they fix that first outcome? And I think the offense has to play better. They have to be consistently productive. That's the defense I don't have many concerns over. As a matter of fact, I think that as much as you could say that Jared Goff just had an off day throwing those picks, I don't – maybe a little fine, but I don't actually think that that was too abnormal. I think that this defense gets after people, and if you're mid like Jared Goff is, then I think that – and maybe that's a little harsh. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the guy, but it's Jared Goff, and we know what Jared Goff is at this point. And so I think that, to me, Ben Johnson does a good job at putting defenses in binds, and I still love myself some Ben Johnson, but I think this defense is here to stay. What you've seen is not a mirage. So really, to me, it's all about how does this offense produce – and the good news is, I know, Don Burr, you're in the chat. I believe Aleem McNeil is still out. That defense has kind of come back to earth for whatever reason. And those linebackers, I think Jack Campbell is going to be a fantastic player, but he is very young, and you can see it on the tape, making a lot of plays where you're like, he's in the right position, wrong house, right neighborhood consistently on the Lions tape. So to me, I think that it's all about Luke Getsy finding a way to overcome Aaron Glenn's defense, and hopefully you're trusting Justin Fields a little more than throwing four screens in a row. That would be a good start.
Yeah. I think defensively we have to be aggressive. I think that's the biggest thing is we got those turnovers, we got a lead, and then we played back. We played soft zones, and Jared Goff was able to pick us apart with underneath throws, and he's got guys that'll break tackles. You got Sam Laporta, who's doing amazing things at tight end. You've got, of course, Amon-Ra St. Brown just doing what Amon-Ra St. Brown does. I don't know where he gets his motivation from, but he uses the hell out of it. And it seems like Jameson Williams, for whatever reason, he does nothing all year, and then he plays the Bears and he gets a huge touchdown at least once in the game. So the defense will have to just the soft shell, man. It pisses me off every time I see it, man. I'm just like,
it's especially because Ben Johnson. I'm going to answer diverse question here about what's Fields compared to Goff, and we'll get to that. But anybody that watches the Lions, I say this because, let's be real, we're talking about coaching candidates every week. Ben Johnson is going to be one of the top names consistently this year. And for anybody that doesn't watch the Lions enough, what Ben Johnson is fantastic at is he's not like some wizard who runs really exotic concepts. Shane Waldron's more of that guy. Ben Johnson runs the meat and potatoes, the staples of offense, but he runs them with great sequencing and little nuanced changes every time so that it looks all the same, but it's a little different. And that is how, to your point, AC, when you play that soft shell, that very static defense, it's easy to know what I'm getting on defense to then scheme up my meat and potatoes play to be successful. And that's how Ben Johnson's been so fantastic in this middle of the field open world where everybody's playing too high. And yes, you have much more creative defenses than the Bears, but at the end of the day, that backside dig, those posts, those crossers, will find a way to get open in the holes of his own defense. And that is where, when you have players like Amon Ross St. Brown and others that are really high IQ football intelligence and know how to find those open zones with these schemed up concepts, and a player that's mid like Jared Goff, he'll find his way. So then real quick, Dumber, the question is, and I don't mean to piss off Bears fans, if Jared Goff is mid, what is Fields? Fields is all Mr. Potential, should have been much better than Jared Goff. But through 3 years of Chicago Bears, has had his confidence wrecked, has had his play. I wouldn't even say it's been wrecked. I just don't think he's developed even 1 ounce compared to Ohio State. So to me, Justin Fields is a project that needs rebuilding and reworking. And I'd love to see him go to a place where he can hopefully sit and learn behind like a Lamar or another player like that to get a couple years to build that confidence back. So I'm not at all saying Justin Fields is better than Jared Goff, but let's be very clear here. Justin Fields is not the top of the league in quarterback, and neither is Jared Goff. So Jordan Love is the best quarterback in the NFC at the moment. NFC North, that is.
Oof, you just made me sick.
Oh. I'm sorry. I don't take any joy of that, but like, the reality is Jordan Love is playing really well.
Chris, what are you looking for in our defense today, brother?
I don't know if I can say anything after that last statement by Jordan. And unfortunately, I agree with Jordan as well.
Good player, man.
Regarding our defense, I've been great under the last – well, the Packers have been playing real well the last sort of 4 or 5 games, really. It probably just took him a bit of time just to get him, you know, because, yeah, you know, he didn't really play for like years and years anyway because he was like Aaron Rodgers' backup. So, you know, it always takes a little bit of time for anybody to become the start and then get used to it. But I think regarding our defense, really, we just need to keep pressure on Goff. It showed in the last game that if you put pressure on Goff, especially like up the middle, because he's really a scrambling quarterback, he'll make mistakes. I mean, it was just unfortunate that the Bears didn't make the most out of their turnovers last time we played them.
Yeah.
But I just think really we need to keep pressure on him. Don't play so soft zones all the time. Play a bit more man. And just sort of, yeah, just keep on playing like we did the last sort of couple of games, really. Just keep it really tight and make them make the mistakes like we did last time, really. I mean, when we played them last time, did we actually have Sweat playing for us then? Or was that before he actually signed for
the Yeah, because he had the sack on Goff. Yeah.
Yes, it might have been his first game, I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, I think with Sweat as well, he's just opened up all the other players on the defensive line. He's, you know, a lot of other guys are getting pressure now. And, you know, especially Andrew Billings is stuffing the run-ups. I just think really as well, like they use their running backs quite a lot, a little sort of short patterns out of the backfield. And like Jordan mentioned, like the receivers doing crossing patterns and slants. I think really it's that short to middle part of the field really where we need to be really on ball. And I hope TJ Edwards is on ball really, because basically that's what we brought him in to be, is be that roaming linebacker who's got the height to sort of close down the area of the field for the offense to pass against. As long as we get pressure on Goff, I think we might have a little bit of a sneaky victory, but it's all to do with can the Bears actually finish a game? And you know, hopefully what happened against Minnesota might give them that confidence, or it might show them a way to, you know, to win them games in the last sort of couple of minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, the worst game I can remember Goff having was, it was 2018, so we had our high-level defense, but when he came into Chicago and it was cold on Sunday Night Football when he played for the Rams, we just made that California kid look like he was ready to go back to the beach. And I looked up the weather. It's 34 degrees and cloudy today, so we're not going to have a snow game yet. But maybe the cold weather, and maybe it's changed since he's been in Detroit. I haven't really looked a whole lot at his stats on road as opposed to home. He gets to play in a dome in home. Last week they played the Saints, so they were in a dome. They got up big and started to piss it away. They played the Packers on Thanksgiving, lost that game, and then the week before was when they played us and should have probably lost that game. So to me, I feel like, and this goes back to their coaching, going from being the hunter to becoming the hunted in the NFC North, the way the Lions are having to deal with that, I don't want to say they're cracking, but the pressure seems to be starting to get to them, at least in the last few weeks. They've turned the ball over a ton. He had three interceptions against us, and we caused a fumble on a kick return. He could not hold on to the ball against the Packers. I mean, he put it on the ground several times in that game. But, yeah, just like you said, Chris, taking advantage of those turnovers, if we get them today, it would be the number one thing. Mm-hmm. I believe we had 3 points off 4 turnovers in that game or something like that. And that just ain't going to cut it. I mean, especially when you've got your defense is going to – and like I said, they're playing hard for Eberflus, but at some point, if you're on defense and you're making all these plays and your offense isn't able to take advantage of it, like how much goes into, like, well, why should I do my job if they ain't going to do theirs? You know what I mean? I don't know. It just – and I have no idea how today's game is going to go. Honestly, but we've talked offense, talked defense. Santos is doing fine in the kicking game. I don't know what else to say for our special teams. I mean, we don't have as Velus Jones inactive today. I hope so, because that guy, I know some people were in the chat talking about Velus isn't being used right, or he needs to be a running back. I think he needs to be a free agent. I'm so done with Velus Jones. I just don't think he's good, man. I don't know how else to put it. What was I going to say? I'm so lost in the chat right now.
We talked offense, defense, special teams.
Trying to see what Don Burr was up here saying. He called me out by name.
I'll take you guys for a little bit of a ride, which is it's a very brief one, but Jaden Daniels, the Heisman winner. That was a cool experience. I'm not down on Jaden Daniels. I obviously am not switching my guy, J.J. McCarthy, but Jaden Daniels was the deserving Heisman winner. The reason I bring him up is Jaden Daniels was a Cajon High School quarterback, my alma mater high school. So it's just – I don't want to say it's a deal or anything, but I just thought it was pretty cool to see that Cajon High School finally has a Heisman winner, the most valuable player in a college football season. It's crazy. My high school coach was at the Heisman ceremony last night, and Jaden Daniels called him out and was like, oh, yeah, Coach Rogers is here. So it was cool. It was a little bit surreal. I'm happy for the kid. It's awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. And Jaden Daniels, as a caveat of that, has been jumping up draft boards lately. So maybe
Yes, he is.
Maybe he ends up sneaking into that first round. I'm not sure. I don't know. I thought Jaden was fine, but I don't know if I would say Heisman. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I'm the asshole. But
no, you're not. It's he had amazing counting stats, like amazing. Where I'd have to look him up, but he had over 1,000 yards rushing, if I'm not mistaken. Had, I believe, over 4,000 yards passing. Had 40 touchdowns to less than, I think, 5 interceptions. Like, it's
wow. He had all that in the SEC. I didn't realize his stats were like that.
The kids, and this is where, like, I'm not coming off my J.J. McCarthy thing, but, and I'm not, this is not a one player has to be good, one player has to be bad, but this is my whole problem with Penix, with Daniels, with Nix, is, man, and Kurt Warner was talking about it this morning on Twitter, and I loved it because he's really spot on. He's like, hey, it's just a different world where now you have these grown men playing college football where you've played five whole seasons in the league. Like, I mean, Michael Penix was playing when Justin Fields was in college. And we're talking about Justin Fields is almost at the end of his rookie deal or closer to that end than not. And Michael Penix isn't even in the NFL yet. So it's crazy to me when you think about all these prospects that people are Googling and oogling, you know, drooling over. And I'm like, yeah, but he's played 5 years. He's going to come into the league at 23, 24. And that's not a problem. It's not like you're only going to get 2 years with the guy. But I can't help but think a guy like whether it's Caleb, whether Caleb's 22, Drake May's 21, and J.J. McCarthy's 20. You know, there's a situation where bring those guys in and they can grow.
Yeah, I had heard that this week on the score. They talked about J.J. McCarthy only being 20. I didn't realize he was that young. Yeah, that'd be and we saw Velus get so much hate for coming out at his age. I wonder if we'll see that with these other players as far as their draft stock going down. You know, I don't know if I want to draft a 26-year-old. I mean, I guess a quarterback is different when you have Tom Brady who played till he was 45. But
I mean, you should have heard, like, I actually thought it wasn't bad. I just thought it was kind of funny. They were talking about Bo Nix, how Bo Nix is married and at school. He wasn't, from my understanding, he'd already graduated. He wasn't doing many classes, if at all. So they were talking about it as a good thing. And it kind of is that while he was at Oregon, his life was like a pro football player. He comes home to his wife every day. His whole life, his whole day is centered around football because he's not doing classes. Like, that's who you're drafting, which is not a bad thing, but it's just that is so different than the NFL and college when we were growing up as kids going, man, these guys are desperate. And now with the NIL, it's a huge deal too, is people used to ditch NCAA because it was like, I got to get my money. I got to get a paycheck. Right. And now you have so many players returning because of NIL. It's I don't think that's a bad or a good thing. It's just different. And at least on the age thing, I think I fall a little more with Kurt Warner in that I do think there's a difference. And I'm not saying those kids shouldn't be able to play five seasons, but I do think that when you start comparing certain players, it's important to think about how long they've been in college versus others that, you know, are true juniors coming out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, just like you said, NIL has changed the college game. The transfer portal opened this week, and it's I think everyone in college football hit the transfer portal. So as far as building a roster in college, it's become increasingly difficult, which kind of leads me to think maybe my guy Jim Harbaugh winds up back in the NFL. There were stories that came out this week that says that he is interested, obviously, in coming back to the NFL, whether that's with our Bears or if it's with the Chargers or the Raiders. I just feel like this is the year that it happens. And if the Bears don't move on from Eberflus and we miss out on Harbaugh, I got to be honest, guys, it's going to break my little Chicago Bears heart if that happens.
I heard a rumor that Michigan have actually offered him an extension of $55 million. So I can't even remember when I read or when I heard that. So, I mean, that's a heck of a lot of money to turn down, especially when you're having so much success as well at your present role. But, I'd like to see Jim Harbaugh come around. I mean, I don't really care if the guy's a bit odd. I like a bit of odd and weird. I think that's what we're lacking a little bit. We're lacking a bit of personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What does Eberflus's personality bring over? You know, like we say about the Detroit Lions head coach, that team sort of mirrors is him as a person, I think. And I think that's why they're getting the success that they are now. So, I mean, Jim Harbaugh, he's won everywhere he's gone. He played for the Bears. You know, he's a Mike Dicter fan. But I just don't know how our ownership feel about Jim Harbaugh. I don't know if they had a bit of a fallout when he was playing before he got traded to the Colts. But it'd just be nice to have a guy what's been there, done it, won. I mean, he took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. And have a little bit of have a little bit of swag about him, a little bit of character, a little bit of bite. You know what I mean? I think sometimes feathers need to be ruffled in an organization, especially like the Bears, because it's a family-run institution. But sometimes you need that outside voice just to kick people up the ass and make you realize that the success level should be always at least getting to the playoffs and not just being like, oh, well, we doubled as winnings from 3 to 6. Which is literally what this regime is. So So it'd be interesting to see what's. It's going to be a really interesting off season, I think, for the Bears.
Yeah, yeah, and just like you said about ruffling feathers, I think Jordan has said it before that he is the most Dick-alike head coach that we could get again. I don't know if the McCaskies like that or not, but the fact of the matter is you need someone like that. Go ahead, Jordan.
He reveres Ditka. Like when people ask Jim Harbaugh about like his favorite people, I mean, he'll obviously tell you Bo Schembechler, Beckler from Michigan, but literally the next name out of his mouth is Mike Ditka. And he's got a lot of, I mean, don't get me wrong. He joined the Raiders. So he loves Mark Davis, Al Davis when Al Davis was alive. But as far as coaching, he reveres Mike Ditka, loves the city of Chicago. I don't necessarily think that I don't know if I'm ready to say he's coming to Chicago, but I mean, just real quick to Squeegee's point of like Harbaugh isn't likely leaving Michigan. I mean, it's possible. And listen, $11 million a year is fantastic. I'd be curious to see what the most expensive head coaches make, but I believe it's right around that same level for the NFL.
I know Mark Stoops here at Kentucky makes $8-9 million a year. Okay. And he is a top five. I mean, last time I looked, he's top five in pay.
The best one to look at would be the Matt Rhule contract because it was a $60 million deal for Matt Rhule. And then, I mean, it was his Nebraska contract was 8 years, $72 million. But at the time, it was 7 years, $60 million for Matt Rhule. And so that's even less than 11 a year. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Michigan's trying to kill it with the contract. But to Squeegee's point, the only thing I'd push back on is that, one, Jim Harbaugh's he's been trying to get in the NFL for years now, the last few seasons. And if they – it's different. If they don't win the championship, which they probably won't, that hurts me because J.J. McCarthy's definitely coming back. Jim probably comes back. But it's just from my perspective, if you're Jim Harbaugh, why do I want to go back to Michigan? Next year I'm probably going to deal with some level of discipline for the stuff that went on. People don't talk about this enough. As head coaches, Lovie Smith talked a lot about it. He did not like recruiting, driving to different prospects' houses, hitting the road constantly, trying to convince five stars to come to your school. That's a lot of work as opposed to being able to just be stable in a certain organization at a certain place. And then on top of that, too, nobody wants to talk about it, but Michigan is going to be – I'm not saying they're going to be bad next year, but they are not going to be the team that they are this year. They are losing Blake Corum, senior running back. They're almost – two-thirds of their offensive line is heading out the door. Your best receiver, Roma Wilson's heading out the door. Chris Jenkins, Mikey Samristil, Rod Moore, Will Johnson. Will Johnson's got one more year there, so – Junior Colson, all these players that are on Michigan are heading out the door. And you think Harbaugh wants to stay in Michigan to do the rebuild process while discipline's being levied, while still needing to recruit to get the cupboards stocked back? I just don't see a situation where that seems more appealing than getting a chance at the NFL again if somebody comes knocking, which I'm hoping it's the Raiders, to be honest, because I think Mark Davis swings and isn't fearful to take that chance.
Yeah, I think the money was – I don't think it's so much about the money with Harbaugh. I think he's made so much money. It's more about proving that he can do it at that level. And he's done everything he can at the college level other than win a championship. Now, if he wins a championship, he's definitely gone, I think. But I would hate to see him in Las Vegas because I just don't – I mean, and I guess I can't say the same about the Bears organization, but – they're ran like a trash can organization as well. I mean, the drafting and the ownership and getting involved in decisions is.
But so here's the thing, though, AC. We all know Jim Harbaugh is going to want some control. I'm not saying he wants the title of GM and head coach, but he's going to want the John Gruden control, which is, sure, you can hire me a GM, but at the end of the day, I control the roster. He can have GM, he can do contracts and all that, but I handle who's on the roster and who's not, who's playing, who's not, who's coaching, who's on the cabinet, the staff. That's what Jim Harbaugh is going to want, and that's whether you like it or not, that's what he feels he deserves considering his coaching pedigree, and I think there's some validity to that. Now, answer the question from both of you gentlemen. Who is going to give him that level of control? The Raiders, who don't have a GM and don't have a head coach? Or the Bears, who are more than likely if they're going to move off of anybody, they're going to move off of the head coach and likely keep Ryan Poles. Ryan Poles not about to go, oh, yeah, bring Harbaugh in and, yeah, man, go ahead and run the roster for me. Like, it's just that's the problem that nobody wants to talk about with, you know, Harbaugh coming to the Bears. I'm sure he loves it here. I'm sure he'd want to come here. But I do not think he's about to cede control to the roster. to Ryan Poles, whether he likes it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The Raiders have already cleaned house, so it kind of would make it an easier transition for them. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, I mean, I completely agree what you just said, Jordan, but it makes you think that that's what they've got to do because nothing else has worked. You know what I mean? Nothing else has worked for years, to be honest with you. It really, sir. What we got to, it's like people saying, you know, draft a quarterback in the first rounds and get rid of Fields. And people go, oh, well, that'll take the franchise back so many years. But taking us back from what? It's just been a load of shit for the last God knows how many years. So what have we got to lose? Really? I know that sounds desperate and a bit sort of negative, but we are, you know, it's got to that stage though, hasn't it, really? But
yeah,
just fucking try something a bit left field. Give the guy a go. We've got the money to do it. You know, I mean, like, they're like the fifth biggest earning franchise in the NFL, the Chicago Bears. 4.5 million franchise. So they've got the money. They've had our money.
Yeah,
and I just think people's pride's got to be shoved aside and they've got to think about, you know, the club and the fans. And I wanted to ask McCaskey that when I met him. So I met him twice that I'm in Chicago. But I just didn't have the bottle to do it. I just think really that what we've been doing, it working, so just try something else.
It does kind of worry me though, because you see franchises that get, when they give head coaches more pull. We saw Bill O'Brien in Houston, and now we've seen even the great Bill Belichick, once he was given GM powers in New England, he's kind of ran that franchise into the dirt. I mean, he doesn't draft great. I'm assuming falls in love with prospects. And the guy you just mentioned, Jordan, John Gruden, when he had power in Vegas, when he was drafting guys he liked, how many of those guys are even on the roster anymore? I'm pretty sure it's zero. I'm pretty sure that.
No, I know. It was a god. I mean, you want to talk about like the worst draft history in the last 10 years. The Mike Mayock and John Gruden era is like the lesson on how to fuck up a franchise. Because man, there's Alex Leatherwood lasted 1 year. The Ohio State corner, Gerrion Conley, is no longer on the roster. Henry Ruggs got the DUI charge. They had another player that had gun charges, Damon Arnett. Arnett, I think it was. Tyree Gillespie's gone. Tanner Mews never played a game for them. Malcolm Kuntz is just coming around, so I guess that's positive. Trayvon Morgan has not been anything special. I'm sorry, I don't mean to go, but like that is one of the worst draft times at 10 years of all time. It is horrendous.
Yeah, that's true. But we're starting to run out of time, fellas, so we got to get into the finishing out this show. So if you will, I'll start with Chris since you seem the most optimistic. But give me a score prediction, a bold prediction, an MVP, and then go ahead and hit your shout outs and stuff. We'll get on out of here and let the Goon and Adam take over. Go ahead.
I mean, for me, I think the Bears, I'm just going to say the Bears might sneak it. I think it could be something like 24-21. I think Sweat could be the MVP for me. I think if he has a good game and our defense could be on fire, we could be getting them turnovers again. I just feel like if we can keep that momentum from, I know it was like 2 weeks ago, the last game, but if we can keep that sort of momentum going, and it might just give Fields a bit of belief, and maybe the coaching staff, like Getz, has got a bit more belief in Fields and vice versa, that I'm just hoping we might sneak it. So yeah, 24-21. Shout out to obviously two boys. It's been a completely enjoyable show today. It's been fantastic. And also, a little bit of a plug for myself. I'm actually going to be hosting a show called The British Bears on Dan's channel, BCP, Bears Country Productions. I'm going to be starting that this Tuesday at 5 o'clock Eastern time. I'm going to be doing it with a guy called Jason, who's a fellow Brit. So we're hoping to get some British people on and give you guys a bit of an international feel. So I'll do them a little plug for that. But yeah, hopefully, you know, a victory today. And I say it's always a joy to talk football with you boys on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah. Chris will have to have some of his bangers of mash on that show with Jason. So,
well, go ahead and hit your stuff, Jordan. Give me your score prediction, bowl prediction, MVP, and hit shout-outs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Score prediction, let's go 31 Lions, 24 to 27 Bears. I not trying to be a negative guy. I just think that the Lions – the problem is, really, it's not even so much about the Bears. I just think the Lions have been on a downswing, and I think they know that they need to kick shit into high gear. And if there's a game that they probably feel like they can swing things around, I think it's – they think they can beat Chicago. So I think it's a tight, gritty game, but I think the Bears pull it out by just – or, excuse me, the Lions pull it out by just a hair. So that's the score, the Lions winning. And then MVP, I'm going to go – ooh, that's tough. I'm going to go David Montgomery. I think David Montgomery just has a day today. Because again, it's revenge game. I want to mash the team in their stadium. So I think that's MVP. Bowl prediction. Give me a Roschon Johnson touchdown. That's definitely not going to happen, but I look forward to it. That's why it's bold. So there's that. And then shout outs, of course, it's you boys. Always appreciate you fellas. And we miss KB. KB, get better. So we can see you back. And then, of course, everybody follow the algorithm. Hit the like the video, subscribe, leave comments, interact with the video, do all that. We love having you here. But it also keeps Aldo and the lights on for Barroom Network. So this is why we do it for you all, and appreciate you all in the chat today. You've been fantastic at all, as always, bringing good questions, comments, interaction. And that's what we appreciate. So thank you, fellas. I hope you all have a good week. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope the Bears find a way to pull out a win, but we'll see, and I can't wait to watch it.
Well, I've actually already bet this game. I bet Bears money line.
What is the line?
It was 3 when I bet it. So,
That lines up. I think that they're going to lose by just a tiny bit, which is correct.
Yeah. But it's hard for me to trust this coaching staff in close games, man. That's what it is. That's what's killing me on this. I would bet I think it's going to be a pretty decently scoring game, but man, I just got to give the Lions the nod. I think it's close. I think it's close all the way down to the end, but give me the Lions 27, Bears 24. I think we get some interceptions. My bold prediction is that Kyler Gordon gets a pick 6 today. So that'll be my bold prediction. My MVP, I got to go with Montez Sweat. I really like the way the defense has bounced back since he's been on the team. And I think he's becoming a leader on that defense quickly. And I think your leaders have to be some of your best players on your team, whether they wear the C on their chest or not. I think that has to be your leaders. You can't just make a backup quarterback the leader of your team, you know, or something like that. So I think that he's taken over with that. But my shout outs, first and foremost, shout out to you guys. Shout out to KB and Tooch, who are both under the weather this morning. Tune in to the Tooch after this. He's going to help you set your fantasy lineup if you made the playoffs in your fantasy team. So stick in with that. Just like Jordan said, subscribe to the Barroom Network. We got so many shows. I know Otani did not sign with my beloved Cubs, so I don't know if they've done a show on baseball lately, but the hot stove, as they call it in baseball, is heating up. So I'm sure Crosstown Crosstalk will be getting into that with Vinny Parisi, and the hockey season is in full effect, so they do their show weekly on there as well. Just subscribe to the Barroom, and they'll tell you whenever we go live. But shout out to you guys. Shout out to the chat for bringing all great questions and comments. And Don Burr's in there talking all of his mess again. You know, I mean, it's Lions week. I expected it, you know, so I definitely expected to see him in there. But it's good, clean comments. We're not going at each other's mothers or anything like that. But I do like that we keep it a little bit clean. But, I mean, other than that, man, we'll just leave everybody with a bear down.
Bear down.
Bear down.